Sichas Parshas Metzeda and Shabbos HaGadol is in Likutei Sichas Chelek Aleph, in the first volume of Likutei Sichas. This Shabbos, the Rebbe says, as with every Shabbos of the year, this Shabbos is connected with a particular Parsha in the Torah. And he doesn't mention the name of the Parsha. Then the Rebbe says that the Friedrich Rebbe always avoided mentioning the name of this week's Parsha. In many Svarim, this Parsha is called Parsha Tahara. But the Friedrich Rebbe avoided mentioning any name referring to this Parsha with any name at all. Instead, he would give the date of the day of the month, but not mention the name of the Parsha. Also, we are in the month of Nisan, the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. As with all things in Torah, there are no coincidences. So the fact that we read this Parsha during this time in this month must mean that there's a connection between them and a lesson to be derived from it. Concerning the coming out of Mitzrayim, the Razal say that it happened b'schus ho'emuna, by on the merit of the faith of our fathers, they came out of Egypt. Emuna, and not understanding. What is the virtue of emuna, and how is it connected to coming out of Mitzrayim? The explanation is that human beings have belief and recognize the existence of a creator. However, that is not true emuna, but it is a recognition that comes as a byproduct of logic of seichel. Anyone who stops to think about the existence of the world based on the principle that no thing can create itself must come to the recognition that the world has a creator. But since the godliness, the existence of God in the abstract, is not familiar to human beings, it is the existence of the world that brings them to the recognition of the existence of a creator, they will therefore recognize only that part of God that is connected to the world, to the creation. Which means that it's restricted to the level of nature. But that part of God which is beyond nature, which is beyond creation, in this they have no recognition. The emunah of a Jew, on the other hand, doesn't come from existence. We don't believe in God because the world exists. Rather, godliness feels familiar to the Jewish soul. And so the Jew recognizes even that part of God that has no connection to creation and is not involved in the act of creation. And so Chassidus explains that the difference between human faith and Jewish faith is that Jews believe in Hashem, the name of God that represents past, present, and future, all in one word, which transcends nature. And the faith of human beings, as in the case of Paray and his astrologers, they could not relate to Hashem. Lo yadaiti es Hashem, they said, we don't know God, but they did recognize that etzba elikim hu, that the plagues were the finger of God, of Elohim. So they recognize Elohim, but they don't recognize Hashem. To make it clearer, in every event that happens in the world, the human being seeks a natural explanation. Unless a miracle is so obvious that it can't be denied, the human being will try to explain everything according to nature. And even when he sees a miracle and must admit that it's a divine intervention, he still tries to minimize the miraculous and as much as possible fit even the miracle into the guideline, into the framework of nature. And the exact opposite is true of a Jew. In everything that happens, the Jew looks for the godliness of it. And just as, even with a miracle, the human mind seeks all sorts of explanations to find some kind of natural order, with the Jew, it's the exact opposite. Even in perfectly natural events, the Jew demands to see the godliness behind it. As the Yerushalmi says, "Maimin b'chei lamin v'zedeya," that a Jew believes in the creator of the world and plants or sows his seeds. That although everybody knows that according to the laws of nature, if you plant a seed in the earth, something will grow from it, but the Jew is obstinately convinced that it is only the blessing of God that makes things grow. And if it were nature alone, on nature the Jew would not rely so strongly as to plant a perfectly good and useful seed in the ground and destroy it or lose it on the trust that the laws of nature will make things grow. He doesn't trust the laws of nature enough to do this. The reason he does put the seed in the ground is because he trusts in God, who will bless his efforts and make things grow. Just as a miracle that has no explanation, that is not within the realm of nature at all, is certainly coming from God, who created this intervention, this divine intervention, the same is also true of all things that are perfectly natural. And that's why, if we want to deceive ourselves, then even the biggest miracle won't convince us otherwise. We can always find an explanation, a rationalization, to explain away the miracle. And that's why we see that even with the greatest of miracles, the splitting of the Yam Suf, the splitting of the sea, even there was the possibility of making a mistake and thinking that it was natural and not a miracle at all. As it says in the Mechilta, that during the time of Kriyas Yam Suf, when the waters of the Yam Suf split, all the waters in the world split as well, except for the river Pras, as the Chiddiki Rebbe writes in the Rebbe Marash writes in a Maimon. And so it says that all the nations were overcome with a great fear when they heard that the sea split for the Jews. But the fact that all the waters in the world split as well, that left a possibility of dismissing the miracle and attributing it to nature. Because if it were happening only for the Jews, then why would all the waters in the world have to split? And because all the waters in the world split, that left room for the human being to deny the miracle and thereby make freedom of choice still possible even after the miracle. So if you want to deceive yourself, no miracle is ever a miracle. And on the other hand, if you don't want to deceive yourself, then nature is never natural, but everything in nature is itself miraculous, a divine intervention. And that is the meaning of the redemption coming in the merit of Emunah. Mitzrayim means restrictions, limitations. And in limitations, there are two types. There is the limitation of holiness, and there's the limitation of unholiness. The limitation of holiness, as we said before, recognizes godliness, but in a limited fashion. He knows that there's a creator, but only to the degree that his mind, that his logic, dictates. As the Emunah in the name Elohim, but not in the name Hashem. And this makes possible the second restriction. This is the beginnings of the second restriction, the restriction of unholiness of Klippa, where God forbid one forgets completely about the presence of God and gets drawn down into the lowest levels of unholiness the 49 Sha'arei Tumah. But by virtue of the emunah, which Jews have, in that we completely dismiss the laws of nature and recognize the divine within the world, so not only are spiritual things unrestricted, there's no mitzrayim of the kedusha, of the spirituality of the Jew, but even in the physical, in which Jews are apparently similar to all human beings, yet even here, Jews are unique. So this emunah, this uniqueness of Jewish faith, brought about a revelation that is higher than nature, and so it resulted in the Yetzias Mitzrayim, coming out of restrictions. Not only the restrictions of Klippa, but even the restrictions of Kedusha. And this is also hinted at in this week's Parsha, where it speaks about the plagues, the leprosy, the Negoyim. The Rambam writes concerning these Negoyim, these leprosy spots, whether they happen on garments or in houses, that this is not a natural phenomenon, but rather a sign from above that warns the Jew against Lashon Hara, against slander. And the Rambam there explains at length the order in which these things happen. That first, the beams of the house are afflicted. And if that doesn't help, then the leather the leather products in the house are afflicted, and so on. So just as it is with these spots, with these leprous spots, that when they occurred, it was obvious that this was not a natural phenomenon, but something coming from above. In the same way, Jews believed concerning all things that happen, that all of it comes from above by divine providence, by Hashgacha Pratis. And just as with the Negoyim, with the spots, everything has a purpose and a message. This is to warn them of a sin and so on. In addition to that, it is also, in its essence, a good thing. It is a hidden good, a blessing in disguise. And so it is also with all events in the world, not only with the spots on the house, that all events, even if they don't seem to be good, if they don't seem an obvious blessing, are really a blessing in disguise. And as a result, we are told that when the plague, when the spots occurred in the house, they would have to break that part of the cement, or that part of the house, the wall. They would have to break it out and replace it. And when they would break out the portions of the wall, they would find hidden treasures left there by the people who had lived in Israel before the Jews got there. And so the spot that looked like a plague really turned out to be a blessing. And so it is with all things in the world. Whatever looks like it's not a blessing, the Jew recognizes in his unique emunah that this too is for the good. Based on what we said before, we can now understand a statement from the Gemara that says, Ruach Tzfenis Eina Mesuvevis, that when God created the world, he completed three sides, but the fourth side, the north side, is not yet completed. So the reason for that is given, that in order to show that the creation of the world, of heaven and earth, is a miraculous thing that human beings are not capable of. And that is, should a person come along and say that the existence of the world is not miraculous, then we will say to him, if you believe that the world creation is not miraculous, there is a little piece of creation left uncompleted. See if you can complete it. And when he sees that he can't, then he will have to recognize that creation comes from God and only God could create. So at first glance, this is difficult to understand. How is it possible that a person should say that the creation of the world is not miraculous? But as mentioned before, God always leaves room in order for a person to have bechira, to have freedom of choice. There has to always be room for a person to dismiss any miracle that he sees. So the Yetzer Hara, in its brilliance, can convince a person, even concerning the creation of the world, that he should not be excited or impressed and not consider it a great miracle. On the other hand, although the world is created in such a way that it allows for people to be so confused and so off base concerning godliness, yet on the other hand, God always makes it possible for the godliness to be recognized. There's always one detail that remains unfinished, which human beings cannot handle, can't fix it on their own. And that detail is to remind them that the world really is coming from God, and from this detail they understand the rest of creation. Since just as they can't master, they can't handle this detail, they really can't handle the world, and they have to depend on God. And just as it is with the creation of the world, so it is also with the conduct of the world, whether it is natural or miraculous. Even when a person wants to convince himself that his success, for example, in business, comes as a result of nature, or as a result of his nature, because he's brilliant, because he's shrewd, because he's resourceful, and so on, and the world, as it exists, the concealment of godliness, allows for such a thought and for such a belief. At the same time, God always provides a detail in which the person sees that he can't, no matter how hard he tries, he can't cover or take care of that detail. And if he stops to think about the significance of that detail, he must come to the recognition that not only is this detail beyond his control, but in fact, all success, the success that he does experience, that also is not coming from him, but from the Creator. And that's why when a person sees that in a certain area he cannot succeed, rather than try harder and become obsessed with succeeding, he should admit that God runs the world and trust that God will give him success in this detail as well, and then he will be able to succeed. And just as it is with the individual, it is true also of the people as a whole, that when we see that there are certain things that are just not working for the Jewish people, we just can't seem to make it happen as a nation, we shouldn't try harder and become stubborn about it, but rather we should strengthen our emunah, our recognition that all comes from God, and our trust that God will provide. And then God will complete the world, including also the northern side, which the Gemara tells us, Mitzafon, to Pasuk Chazor, that all evil comes from the northern side. Mitzafon, to Pasuk Chazor is a quote from the Navi, Yirmiyahu, and is explained in Pirkei de Abeleza, that even the northern side, which has always produced suffering for the Jewish people, that also will become finished and completed, so that the world is no longer shaky, unstable, but it will become a true peace in the world with the coming of the Geula Hasida, with the complete and final redemption, when all the nations of the world will recognize the truth of godliness, and then we won't have to depend on the kindness of other nations or on the support of other nations, but we will depend on God himself, who will bring us to the promised land, the good and abundant land, the land which God's eye is upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year through the coming of Mashiach b'mheira b'yameinu. In 1954, the Rebbe launched Mifta Matzah. And he says in the Sicha here that in the month of Nisan, we find many categories of mitzvahs. We find mitzvahs that come from the Torah, mitzvahs that come from the Rabbanon, from the sages, and customs. The main part of the month of Nisan is, of course, the holiday of Pesach. As the Gemara says, that which it says, Be'echad b'Nisan, Rosh Hashanah l'Regolim, that the first day of Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for holidays, it's referring to the holiday that occurs in Nisan, which is Pesach. And in Pesach, we find mitzvahs that are d'oraisa from Torah, mitzvahs d'rabbanan, and customs. One of the customs in relation to Pesach is the custom that once existed, that before Pesach, the rabbis would send Shmurah Matzah to all of their congregants. And they would send 6 matzahs so that they would have 3 matzahs for each of the Seder plates. Or at the very least, 2 matzahs so that they would have the kezayis necessary for the middle matzah for each of the Seders to fulfill the special mitzvah of matzah. The simple practical reason for the mitzvah was to increase the rabbi's income. That when they sent in the matzahs, the people would send back money for the matzah, and that would go to the rabbi's income, towards the rabbi's income. But in the process, something very important was accomplished. Since there are so many laws and so many details to the mitzvah of matzah, and not everyone knows these laws, and not everyone can prepare matzah for themselves, that's why the rabbis would take that responsibility for all of their congregants to make sure that they would be eating real matzah worthy of the mitzvah. For various reasons, in many places, this minhag fell into disuse. And it's not important to discuss what those reasons are that brought about this loss of the custom. What is important is that if it were up to me, I would say that we should reinstitute this custom, that all rabbis should send Shmurah Matzah to their congregants. In fact, not only should rabbis do this, but everyone should. Anyone who has any influence on others, whether it's a rabbi, a sheikhet, a reverend, or a shamish, if there is someone who you could help by bringing them this kind, the Shmurah Matzah, and the person you bring it to will use it for his Seder plate, then it should be done. Send in the matzahs, and necessarily the round Shmurah Matzah that is baked by hand, because through that, hundreds and thousands of Jews will be more careful in the fulfillment of the mitzvah, and the mitzvah will be fulfilled in its most beautiful, the hiddur, in its most beautiful way. In places where they have collective siddurim, it is obvious that those siddurim should also serve real Shmurah Matzah. And the effect of matzah is known to be very great, as the Zohar says, that it brings healing of all illness, and it brings emunah and strengthens the emunah. So that we are guaranteed that as a result of the matzah, we will have a healthy year and a blessed year, begashmius and beruchmius.